things.
This is chapter 15. The respected supreme divinity said, "They speak of a banyan tree with its roots above. Its leaves are the indestructible meters of Sanskrit. Who knows this knows wisdom. Below and above, its branches are spread, nourished by the qualities. Opinions are its buds below, and its roots stretch forth, giving rise to action in the world of men. Its form is not perceived here, as it has no beginning, nor end, nor base. Cut down this strong-rooted banyan tree with the weapon of non-attachment. Then that goal should be pursued from where you will not return again. Even I seek refuge in that ancient perfect consciousness from which the activities of evolution originally streamed forth. Liberated by purifying ignorance, by conquering the faults of attachment, by eternally contemplating the spirit with unchanging desires among opposing alternatives, from attachment to pleasure and pain, those who are free from delusion reach that imperishable goal. The sun does not illuminate that, nor the moon, nor fire. Having gone to my supreme residence, they do not return. Only a small portion of my eternal self residing in nature attracts the existence of an individual life in the manifested world, with senses and mind known as the sixth sense. When the great ruler of all obtains a body, and when he leaves it as well, he accepts these with the same lack of attachment as does the wind in carrying scents from those who emit scent. How attached does the wind feel when it picks up a scent and carries it a distance? Not very attached to it. He drops that scent and picks up another one. In the same way, the great ruler of all obtains a body, with the same amount of attachment as the wind picking up a scent. And here is that great ruler of all wearing so many bodies, just without attachment. He experiences various ideas because he presides over the ears, eyes, skin, taste, and scent. Remember the five gyanindriyas, the organs of knowledge, and also over the mind. Those who are foolishly united with qualities do not see the one who goes or stays or who enjoys, only those who perceive through the eyes of wisdom. So those who are attached to the worldly objects only see their relationship and attachments to the world. They don't see the one who is really enjoying. They only experience the enjoyment and think it's their own. The beings of union who strive see this situated in the soul. Those who strive, who have not yet purified their souls, who are not fully conscious, do not see this. The light which comes from the sun illuminates the entire world. So also the light of the moon and the light of fire. Know that light as mine. Permeating the earth, I support all beings, and by my subtle energy and vegetation, I nourish all. Having become the moon, I raise the waters. Having taken refuge in the body of living beings as the universal being of light, united with the inflowing breath and the outflowing breath, I digest the four kinds of food. Food for our worldly selves, food for our intellectual selves, food for our spiritual selves, and food for the universal soul of all. And I am situated in the hearts of all. From me have come memory and wisdom and their absence. I am all that can be known, all that should be known, the author of all that is known, and the one who knows all as well. There are two aspects of perfect consciousness in the world, the perishable and the imperishable. The perishable resides in all manifested beings, and the imperishable is called beyond change. But another name is used for the most excellent perfect consciousness, Supreme Soul, who is called the ruler of all, who pervades and sustains the three worlds. I am the most excellent, imperishable, beyond the perishable. Therefore, I am known in all wisdom as the excellent, perfect consciousness. He who is free from delusion and knows me as the all-knowing, excellent, perfect consciousness, he worships me with his complete attitude, O descendant of the light of wisdom, Arjuna. Thus, this most secret science has been explained by me, O sinless one. Knowing this, the intelligent one has accomplished all effects, O descendant of the light of wisdom, Arjuna. Oh. Let's speak a moment about this banyan tree, which grows in heaven with its roots above and its branches and leaves below. What is this root, this banyan tree? Of course, the banyan is a sacred tree. It's also known as ashwat in Sanskrit. And the ashwat, ashwa is the root of ashwa is the insatiable thirst for knowledge, the continuous desire to proceed, something like what Aristotle called entelechy, this inner urge to become, to become something greater, to become something more. And this is the name of the tree that has its roots in heaven. It's always trying to expand itself, extend itself, to arrive at its most perfect nature. And its leaves are the indestructible meters of Sanskrit. It's always infinite and beyond conception. The indestructible meters of Sanskrit. Remember, san means altogether. Kri means to do. What we do altogether is our language of communication. And remember, every letter of Sanskrit is a bij mantra. It's the closest expression possible to define every object and every relationship, every vibration that has the capacity to evolve into existence. Every letter of Sanskrit stands for all that can evolve into existence. So here's this tree in, with its roots in heaven, which means the continuous desire to express itself. And its leaves and its branches are down below in the world of manifested existence. And they are the indestructible meters of Sanskrit. All the letters that can express all the vibrations of all the objects and all the relationships that can ever evolve into existence. Who knows this, knows wisdom. Because we see all the expressions of that divine root being played out on the stage of life. Every perception is a perception of the vibration, which is an expression of divinity. Below and above, its branches are spread, nourished by the qualities, the gunas of nature, sattva-rajas-tam. Opinions are its buds below. That's something different from knowledge. Remember, buddhi is objective knowledge, the knowledge of the true fact. Mon is subjective knowledge, what I think about the true fact. This is a book. Buddhi. That's objective knowledge. This is a good book.
Man.
Subjective knowledge. All the nouns and verbs of experience belong to buddhi. All the adjectives and adverbs of experience belong to man. Citta is all knowledge, objective and subjective. Buddhi, man, and citta give rise to ahamkar, the feeling that I am something different from anything else. Cogito ergo sum. I think, therefore I am. So, they all know. Buddhi, mon, citta. Buddhi is the intellect which conceives objective knowledge. Mon is the mind which applies the adjectives to the objective knowledge and makes it subjective. And citta is recollection, the capacity of remembering all experience. Please. Bibek is the power of discrimination. Oh, it resides in with the Atma, in wisdom, with the soul. The soul has the properties of wisdom and discrimination. Those are the expressions of the soul, which can describe what's happening in the mind and what's happening in the intellect. So the discrimination is a function of the soul. So all that we are perceiving are these qualities of the expression of the banyan tree, which has its roots in heaven and its branches and leaves below. Well, not necessarily, Ma. Medhas we will call the intellect of love. Now, medha is different from buddhi, because buddhi is intellectual knowledge, discrimination of the true fact, an immediate apprehension that this is an objective reality. Yes, absolutely. Medhas is different from buddhi as kanti is different from sundari. Sundari is very beautiful, but kanti is more beautiful because of my love and her love and our love. Love makes the beauty more beautiful. And in the way that kanti is more beautiful than sundari, in the same way, buddhi is objective intellect. And medhas is the intellect of love. So the intellect is filled with love and delight and joy, and it's intelligent. It's understanding the true fact, but it perceives that fact through the spectacles of love. So it's a little bit colored. If there's any bias on the part of the intellect of medhas, it's the imposition of love on every object of perception. Please.
Where is the perception of duality of its
presence? In ahamkar. Ahamkar is ego. Ego says, I am different from the rest. There's some specific entity here that's distinguished, separate from what I am perceiving. There's a separation between the perceiver and the object of perception. Some type of bifurcation between the observer and the observed.
And then the intellect and mind all kind of come in concert with that mistaken perception?
That's correct.
That style of perception?
That style of perception. Because when we perceive only unity, we perceive no duality, then the mind is silent. There is nothing, no opinion. Then the intellect is silent. There is no name and no form. There is only the medas, the intellect of love. So that medas is what gives the vibhik, which takes us beyond buddhi into the intuitive experience. Amra prakash kori medas. We have an illumination of medas. Whereas we have an intellectual apprehension, a concept of buddhi.
So the medas is that which sort of gives excitement to the intellectual understanding, or makes us want to know more, gets us excited about knowing something more?
Yes, and not only more excited about it, but that excitement, it causes us to focus more and to pay attention more, and we pay attention to the exclusion of delusion. When we focus on anything, we pay attention to it, and all of a sudden, all the rest melts away until we have an intuitive understanding of our relationship.
And vivek also goes away as well?
Yeah,
is that the last thing to go?
That's one of the last things to go, because there's nothing to discriminate. Yes. Yes, it's a function of the soul. Vibhik is discrimination, and it also allows us to have a priori knowledge, as Kant was to define it. So an apprehension that we have an immediate intuitive understanding. It's not an intellectual thing. We know. 1 + 1 = 2, and you know it. You don't have to reason it. You don't have to deduce it. You don't have to logically prove it. You have an innate understanding. And that comes from vivek. And that comes from medas. It's not a function of buddhi. Mm-hmm. Please.
Where does inspiration come from?
Inspiration comes from desire. Icha Shakti. It comes from, we are all, every being created has three energies: Icha, Kriya, and Jnana Shakti. Icha means the energy of desire, a will to be. Kriya means action, something is going on to maintain this entity, this being, this physiology. Gan means there is an energy of knowledge. There is a certain direction to the evolution of this form. So now this desire, this will, desires to be, to express itself or to evolve in a certain way. When we perceive someone or something that has evolved in a greater to a greater extent in the way that we're trying to evolve or desiring to evolve, we become inspired to move in that direction, almost a magnetic attraction. And that's our inspiration. So when we talk about the Durga Puja, we have 9 Durgas. Pratamang Shailaputri Cha. The first is the goddess of inspiration. You see something you like and it attracts you. Dvitiyang Brahmacharini, the second is the goddess of sacred study. We study about what it is that turns us on. We learn about our inspiration. Tritiyang Chandragangteti, the third is the goddess of practice. We practice what we learned about our inspiration. Kushmandeti Chaturthakam, the fourth is the goddess of refinement. We refine our practice until it becomes free from error. Panchamang Skandamatiti, the fifth one is the goddess who nurtures divinity, and we can feel ourselves becoming more and more divine. Shashtang Katyayaniti cha, the sixth is the goddess who is ever pure and clear and focused and completely free from error. Shaptamang Kalaratriti, the seventh is the goddess who overcomes the darkness of duality. We lose all the darkness in whatever action that we're performing. Mahaguriti Chashtamam, and the eighth is the goddess of the great radiant light. Navamangs Didhidhatri Cha, and the ninth is the goddess who grants perfection. Navadurga Prakirtita, and these are the nine Durgas. Yuktanye Tani Nabani, united in succession in the path of divinity. Brahmani Neva Mahatmana, and the great soul of the Supreme Himself has proclaimed this is the path to perfection in every avenue of endeavor that we choose. We get an inspiration, we learn about it, we practice our knowledge, we cultivate perfection, we surrender the ego, we nurture divinity, we give up the darkness, become one with the light, and the ninth is the grantor of perfection. This is the path, whether you want to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an Indian chief. This is the path. No matter what course of study we choose, we get an inspiration to follow that course, we take the curriculum, we check off class by class what we have to do to get there to our goal. This is the method of proceeding. That's how we take the inspiration. We see somebody who's got it, and that's where we want to go. And so we feel a natural attraction to follow. Our heart just wants to go. Our feet know the way. Whether our minds want to or not, the day you fell in love, you just couldn't get away from the telephone. Are there other questions about chapter 15? Yes, go, Tom, please.
There's one part of the tree that was manifesting the vibrations of the beach mantras in the form of Sanskrit in the leaves. We have to cut down this tree. This includes cutting down the branch, the leaves of the tree, which are connected to the tree.
He says, with the weapon of non-attachment,
yes.
Cut down the tree of all activity. Absolutely. Absolutely. Ultimately, we're going to go beyond Sanskrit into union with God. Sanskrit is the vehicle. But union with God is even superior to the study of Sanskrit. Sanskrit is a path to union with God. But it's like the value of a well where you're sitting by the side of the river. Why would you need the well, once you have the river? In the same way, cut down the tree with the tool of non-attachment.
He says, in that goal should be pursued to the point you will not return again. Even I see what you can do, which is the perfect consciousness from which the activities of evolution originally stream forth. And this is
that's right. Absolutely. It reminds me of Socrates going to Delphi and saying, who's the most wise man in all of Greece? And the oracle proclaimed, you are, because you, everyone else professes to know, and you know that you do not. So even Socrates is constantly, it was like Diogenes walking around Greece with a big lantern, and he said, everyone said, what are you looking for? What are you doing with that lantern? He said, I'm looking for an honest man. In the same way, the searchers for truth, those who are constantly seeking, they're continually refining their sadhana. There is no end. Its roots are above, and they're infinite and chirasthaya. They're beyond conception. And as soon as we try to put a limit on it and say, okay, I've done enough, you lost. Mm-hmm. There is no end.
Like the story you told the other night.
Uh-oh.
About Narad.
Yes. there are many, many, many stories. So there is no end. Even for Krishna. Even for Shiva. Even for Shrima.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are there other questions? Well, that was relatively painless. Om Sang Saraswati Namaha. Thank you.